Ladies and gentlemen, today marks a new day for the state of Missouri. For too many years, politics and partisanship have stood in the way of progress, and the people of Missouri, they're tired of it. The only way we'll meet the needs of Missouri families is by working together, putting our shared principles ahead of our political differences. Today, we stop thinking about what should have been, and we start creating the future we all deserve.
Welcome to part three of our five-part series on the 30-year career and legacy of our 55th governor of the state of Missouri, Governor Jay Dixon. In the third part, we're going to talk about Governor Nixon's first term, a term with a lot of accomplishments, a lot of Republicans elected, and kind of straddling the gap between the old Democratic Party of Harry Truman and some of the modern incarnations the Democratic Party took on leading up to his reelection. I hope you'll enjoy part three as much as we did sitting down to it, and we'll have part four tomorrow. Governor, I want to thank you again at the top of each of these segments for sitting down with us. I've learned a ton, and I've really enjoyed talking to a lot of people in your administration and around Missouri politics, Republicans and Democrats.
Well, it's been a lifetime commitment of mine to have the press learn more so as to help the public know more.
Yeah.
I think one of the gaps we've got here is an uninformed citizenry is a dangerous in a democracy. Because then only every couple of years or so they get to speak, and if they don't have information, mistakes get made.
Well, we left off. We were talking about your time in the Attorney General's office. You've been a four-time Attorney General now, setting up for a race in 2008. Walk me through. It seems like you come right out of the gate that you were going to run. After the elections in 2004, it seems like you had decided, I'm going to run for governor. I'm going all in. What was the discussion like? I'm sure you had to talk to folks like Senator McCaskill, who had just ran in 2004 herself.
Yeah, I had a lot of direct conversations with people because I think I wanted to be very clear that I was running. And, you know, some people, people had different reactions to that. Obviously, the vast majority were supportive, but I felt strongly that it was time. I knew very, very clearly that when I was re-elected Attorney General, that was going to be the last time I sought that office.
At what point did you have any suspicions that you would not be running against the incumbent governor?
I always assumed that I would. There's others that thought he wouldn't, and there was always talk that perhaps he wouldn't. But I was legitimately surprised that January evening. January late afternoon.
Surprised, but I'm sure not shocked. I mean, if you were around Governor Blunt, I don't think it was a shock to people that were around him.
Some people enjoy this line of work more than others. Matt and I have remained in contact, and he was helpful on auto industry stuff. I thanked him for coming to Kansas City for an event that we had with the Hawthorne Foundation. And he seems a lot more relaxed, a lot more happy now than he did when he was governor.
What's the, you're part of a very exclusive club, people that know what that job's like, people that know the pressures and the toll it takes on your family. Do you keep those contacts up with a guy like Matt Blunt, who you guys were one time potential rivals, but he understands more of what you went through than most other people in the state?
I think a couple of things. First of all, we try to protect each other. I think there's that. I mean, you're not going to see, I don't think any, you could call up the other governors if they were talking. I don't think you'd always see them. And we certainly have our agreements and disagreements. I don't mean to say that we're all the same, but I do think we respect the office and respect the challenges of it. And consequently, and I thank him for the good transition that we had. And I hopefully Governor Grimes feels the same way about the transition that I led when he was coming in. I think that, so you get a chance to see him in formal things. As far as which former governors I worked most closely with as governor, Bond would be by far the closest of them, just because for a couple of reasons. Number one, that recession of 81, 82 really was somewhat similar to the 09. And when I reached out to him, he had some very specific ideas, was helpful. So that was a good process. So Kit and I just bumped together for a longer period of time on some of those issues. But I'm confident that if any of these governors called me or I called them, that would be a call turned very quickly, and whatever we said to each other would not be said to you.
In preparation for this, I spoke to Senator Bond. He was very complimentary of you. Let me ask you, as far as Matt Blunt goes, you call Matt Blunt a statesman?
Sure. I mean, anybody that's been governor and done it and served our country and got done some things he said he was going to do, too. I mean, when I disagreed with some of them, but he did what he said he was going to do. And I respect that.
Running against Kenny Hulsoff, interesting situation, guy that had worked for you before when you were the attorney general. He had to really carry a tough mantle being a congressman at a time when Washington was not that popular. And I don't think you ever let him not be called Congressman Hulsoff.
We tended to remind folks of that a few times. I mean, obviously, Kenny worked for me in the AG's office, continued to work for me when we ran against Volkmer for Congress, mm-hmm. which was very, very difficult thing for Congressman Volkmer. we backed up his caseload a little bit, but Kenny was an accomplished prosecutor. We had work to do.
You took some heat from him, if I recall, from Congressman Volkmer.
Yeah, he was not happy. No, he was not enthralled by that.
I go back to the story you told us in the last segment about how you didn't need to do the fake thing politicians do and say, oh, everybody's getting me to run. Like, you can always spot a person that's not maybe up to the job when they say, well, people ask me to run. No, that's what, if they did, whatever. You weren't an establishment pick. Do you think things like that help you make decisions like, well, Congressman Volkmer, do what I think's right here, and sorry.
I just have always been somebody that felt like...
Not everyone would have made the decision you made with Kenny Hulsoff running for Congress working for you.
Well, and
do you think that helps shape your frame of mind? So you can, when you make a decision like that, there's a track record and a logic behind it.
I think that people don't doubt when I tell them what I'm going to do,
yep.
that I'm going to do it. And I think that clarity is extremely helpful, and I think over a career built up a level of respect.
Let me ask you this. You won by, you get the most votes of anybody in the history of the state of Missouri for governor. At what point did you see this is a good year for Democrats and this is going to be a good year for me running against a congressman?
Well, I mean, the race fit up pretty well in the sense you had a congressman during an anti-Washington time. You had a fellow who, a good congressman and a good guy, a good prosecutor and all that sort of stuff, had worked for me. You know, and quite frankly, you know, he had, I think, positioning challenges because of that.
And he had a short campaign to run to. I mean, he came in, ran a primary. What would that campaign, would it have been different if Sarah Stillman would have been the nominee? Republican women run better. She wasn't in front of a creature of Washington.
You know, I never thought that she... I mean, Kenny, I assume I didn't see all the polling data on there, so I wouldn't want to poll Republicans at the time too much. I mean, individually, I didn't have a big enough sample size to get the data at a level that would make me comfortable, other than to say that I always felt that Kenny was going to make his way through that primary.
Were you ever down in your polling?
I never saw a poll for governor that had me down. That would include Blunt.
When did you know this was going to be? That you were going to screw this up to lose.
I never really thought that. I mean, that's not the way I run. I mean, we worked our tail off. I mean, that's the thing. The day after the midterm election in 06, the Saturday after that, I had 250 people in a room in Jeff City working on what we were doing next from all counties across the state. We've been working it pretty hard. Things can go awry very quickly in elections. And things can move, and people only vote once. And so I never, you know, we felt good about the race. I felt good about the race all the time. But as far as I'm a superstitious guy on election day, not a good guy to be around.
What's your superstitions on election day?
I go to a movie. I was like at AGS, I'll river runs through it by myself, generally by myself. But when I was running for governor, I didn't really want to go to a movie. So we drove around the state and I went to voted early. Then I went down to my mom's grave in Versailles. And then went to my dad's people's places in Jefferson County, Hematite, out where the two governors that are tied to Jefferson County were. Went by the Fletcher House in Hillsboro and then out at the Overlook. With Governor Dunklin there in Herculaneum mm-hmm. by the Shot Tower. So that sort of stuff. And then I try to get to the hotel late, and I would always try to get into the shower, you know, around 7 or so. So I'd be showered, fresh, clean shirt, clean, you know, shave, look good. So I go to the hotel, and about 5 till 7, I say, well, it's time to start my regimen to get in the shower, get ready for the evening. And I am in the shower at 5 after 7. And Georgianne says, you've got a phone call. And I said, you know, I'll be out of the shower in a minute. And she said, well, it's Ken Morley. I think you ought to take the call. And I said, okay. And so I take the phone, and dripping, and Morley says, the AP has just called the race for you. I said, 7:07. So apparently they got polling data, I mean, exit polls or whatever. So it's 7:07. So I didn't have a long time to get worried about late returns that night. Let's just put it that way.
Let me ask a couple questions about the campaign. Would you say you're a pro-life candidate and a pro-life politician?
I think that personally, I don't like abortion. I obviously, and all that sort of stuff. But publicly, quite frankly, I think that it's a choice a woman should be able to make herself. And I think that the construct of Roe v. Wade is a fair contract. It's the three trimesters. Me personally, and I think sometimes on some issues you have to, you know, kind of step beyond. So some issues you personally have a different kind of feeling. So I've, and then plus I think that as we move forward, that issue especially, and a couple of others, guns would be the same. You're legislating or policying on such fringes of the core that it becomes more of a symbolic issue than a significant.
Speaking of symbolism, you allowed some bills to become law without your signature your first term, dealing with abortion. Second term, you use your veto pen more. What was the thought there?
Well, once again, I think they kept going kind of further out. When we started about passing bills as to kind of what line on a floor you should draw the line as to which side and what you can be in a handout and in a doctor's office and what a doctor can say to a patient and what they can't say to a patient. Those go beyond kind of just merely pro-choice or pro-life.
Your critics will say when you weren't running for re-election, you would veto them. Was it truly the bills or just, you know, the second term's different?
You'll ask later about vetoes. I mean, I took it real serious. Maybe it's me and AG. Man, when I signed the bottom of something, it became law. That was something I took real seriously. And I tried to look at each one and decide whether I thought it was better for the state or not. So I'm sure you could pick out some inconsistencies in 30 years of public service and even 8 years as governor. But on those, I felt like, as I said before, I was never comfortable with from a personal level abortion, but I recognize and appreciated that women have a right to make choices about their bodies.
Is it a true statement that today the United States federal court sets abortion policy in the state of Missouri far more than the Missouri legislature does?
There are certainly attempts to legislate beyond what current case law allows, and that's been a tactic on that side of the equation for a long time to try to continue to push the Supreme Court. So I don't, the bottom line is yes, but as far as a strategy, if your strategy is to try to overturn Roe v. Wade or to try to undermine some of the things, you're going to have to do it through the courts. So I'm not as critical of some of those folks as others would be.
Is Jay Nixon a pro-gun politician?
I'm good on guns. The one area where I got jumpy on guns was I thought it was a significant mistake to take away the training requirements for carry concealed. I think that if because people carrying concealed, that means you're carrying a pistol. Most likely place that you're going to use that is either self-defense or self-offense, or squirrels, whatever, rabbits, whatever. But if it's in the 38, if you're shooting squirrels with 38, you're not going to eat them. and I thought that, I mean, all of the deals that we did were if we're going to move forward on concealed carry, which I support moving forward on concealed carry, I mean, as long as I supported it, then we're going to have a training because the vast number of the situations that were going to occur where that would be relevant would be defending yourself or coming in and helping somebody else. And man, unless you've shot a pistol under pressure, unless you've been trained as to what can happen with it. And I felt that late in the term that the bill where they got rid of the sheriff's ability to say no on concealed carries. And because those sheriffs, man, I undermining the power of a sheriff about who should carry concealed and then saying no training. So I'm a pro-gun guy, but I'm more of a pro-gun guy as a guy that likes to shoot, hunt, fish, and all, you know, all that sort of stuff.
So you get the call from Ken Morley, tells you you're going to be the governor of Missouri. I read where you went and read the biographies of every other governor leading up to yourself. When you read those, what did you learn? And was there a governor who you kind of could see yourself being like, had more similarities than others?
I read them in more detail when I was reelected mm-hmm. than I did on the elect, because I was trying to make sure that the second term was strong, and I was trying to learn from those. While I was aware of them the first term, the real process after the election of the second term was to reread them. And in that sense, there were a couple that really, really jumped out. First of all, I mean, three governors committed suicide in office. It's always the pressure, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's always nice to remember that there's a lot of pressure and people have suffered through things. And I didn't want to just analyze the ones that I knew. So, for example, two that I looked at pretty carefully were Hadley. I liked Hadley for a lot of reasons. He ended up being the president of WashU after he was governor, but he was the first governor to kind of start on the parks and outdoor stuff. 100 years ago, he held the first governor's float trip on the Kern River, brought in congressmen and press from around the world trying to explain what this was, trying to get parks started, couldn't get that done, got a rivers commission, and the beginnings of the Department of Conservation came from Governor Hadley, and he was also an anti-slavery Republican, which is the equivalent of mm-hmm. Democrat now. And I just found him to be interesting. The other one that's interesting to me, and I'm reading his biography right now, is Francis. Only guy that was mayor, mm-hmm. then governor, then was the World's Fair and the Olympics here. He got them here, and then was Secretary of the Interior. So Francis, he was kind of an interesting. Those two are ones that. The other thing I learned from reading those biographies is a lot of times you come in with a belief that here's your agenda, you're going to get your agenda done. A tremendous amount is shaped by forces external sure. to what you are. And it's just good to read that. You come off of winning an election, you say, I'm going to do exactly what I said I'm going to do. And all once you realize, I mean, if you were governor of Missouri the morning of December 8th, 1941, you weren't talking about yeah. economic development. You know, if you, during 9/11, Governor Holden, right after 9/11, sure. Governor Holden was not thinking about how do we get schools better for a while. You know, things happen that completely kind of take it over.
That's a great segue to my next question. So you do this, you're elected governor of Missouri by the largest margin in the history of the state. Capping off your career, you spent in government service. And you get handed one of the worst recessions in American history. When did you know how bad it? When did you know this is bad? And when did you know how bad it was going to be? And what do you do?
Well, it got worse before it got
yeah.
better. So it wasn't like it wasn't like inauguration day. All the economy said, "Oh, good, now yeah. we'll all get going back again." So we knew it was going to be challenging, and it ended up being more challenging than we thought fiscally. Basically, the first day it was an offset to take $200 million out of the budget and downsize by 800 employees. Not exactly the way to create
no.
jobs. You're not going to create jobs. I got to lay people off. But I was deeply committed to I wasn't going to raise taxes. In fact, cut them a few times. I was going to make it work. I was going to balance it. So we began that first year. I think, Scott, I think we had six or seven different restriction times we had to do. It's also one of the reasons why, even though I didn't have to, I restricted some in December as I was leaving. I wanted to give
yeah.
Governor Grimes as good a chance fiscal as he had. And I wanted to send a message to everybody. It wasn't going to be milk and honey for everybody. That first year was challenging fiscally.
What's the hardest cut you had to make?
Parents as teachers was hard. Yeah, because what we were trying to do really, parents as teachers had evolved in being used much more by upper economic and had not progressed as well in some of the poorer areas of the state. And what we were trying to do is kind of get it means tested and using the budget as a hard way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hard, really hard to do. I think some of the stuff we had to clip libraries a little bit, some of that local library fund and MoreNet, things like that. That were hard. You know, they
yeah.
were just, you had to make a decision about if you were going to, what you weren't going to touch first. So some of those were pretty hard.
So about your State of the State address, I found a very interesting passage where you kind of laid out five things I thought that you weren't to be judged on. And the first was jobs. Obviously, you inherited an economy that was shedding jobs fast. The economy leveled out after a while and progressed. Do you feel like you can look a Missourian in the face and say, you know, there's more jobs and there's better jobs than when I found it?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, we rebirthed the auto industry in a fiscally responsible way that's now had 24,000 jobs. The other thing is we didn't forget that the best economic development tool there is a good education. I mean, we increased, that's one of the times I doubled up A+. A+ is only available in half the schools. We got it to all of them, basically, is one left. But we increased the number of A+ scholarship recipients by 44%. And between 2009 and 2015, we increased the number of four-year public college graduates by 36%. Those are stunning numbers.
Well, that A+ is real.
Yeah,
it's real.
It's people. Very real. Yeah. And so is the four-year public. Bottom line is I increased, even in the toughest time, job training money by 38%. We didn't forget that you got to build a big workforce. You can't just cut your way to progress. You cut because that's the responsibility of the position, but you still have to invest your way to progress. But it was difficult. And I think some of the things that we did, we really accelerate a lot of modernization of computer, which is really hard to do. A new system for labor, a new system for Medicaid, those sorts of things where you could pick up efficiencies. One of the things I'm proudest of that nobody ever talks about anymore is downsize of MoDOT by over 1,000 employees, closing two regional offices. Taking what combined a total of $600 million and putting into roads and bridges that otherwise was in, FTE. Because as I said a lot of times, MoDOT was invented before design build, computer assisted drafting. Those are two pretty big seismic changes. So the bottom line is we spent a lot of time working on it, and I'll forever be appreciative and indebted to the amount of time that my team spent, and especially in Lubbock. I mean, we spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
A lot.
Balancing the budget. You said you wanted to balance the budget without new taxes. You did that, right?
Yes.
I always find it interesting, you have the conservatives, the party in Jefferson City, will pass budgets, and while they talk about fiscal restraint and cutting government, the budget's never balanced, even in good times.
I believe that the legislature passed $2.4 billion more than we spent. That's the combined number of what I had to restrict.
Do you think sometimes when the legislature complains about the administration doing things out of their control and maybe doing things they don't like that through the budget process, do you think sometimes it's hard to make those claims and be serious about them when you don't pass a balanced budget?
I think legislators have a hard time passing a balanced budget because they get lobbied. Nobody comes to Jeff City to lobby for a cut. They all come to lobby for money. And the people on the front edge of receiving those lobbying are legislators. Person after person after person, group after group after group, come to your office. And at least the folks in Jeff City are aware of it, unlike the people in D.C. who just like print money and spend it.
Yeah.
I think that I was pretty crafty on what to restrict and how to spend it. I think that... So I'm not overly critical of the, and I think some of the best budget work that was done was when Shields was pro tem and Mayer was pro chair, basically year two, where we had to really get
in there. People don't give Rob Mayer enough credit for his time as a pro chair.
I went down to his, last time I was down that area, I went to his court, had a cup of coffee with him back, and I thanked him personally again. I mean, Rob was really, really, because remember, the House passed a budget that was way over. They just said, throw all the stimulus money in, throw anything in, we'll figure it out later, and all that sort of stuff. It gets to the Senate, Charlie says, well, let's wait 3 days, let's reboot government, let's take a few days off here, let's come up with some ideas, let's do this, we work with them. Now, they didn't get to my number, I had to cut more later, but when they were voting on that budget, I left my office in the Capitol, went up to the floor and stood on the side, and when the vote was over, asked Rob Mayer to come over and shook his hand and thanked him for his work. I mean, I didn't do that very often in a situation like that. I thought he was that level of leadership. I appreciate it. I think he was never that comfortable as pro tem as compared to how comfortable he was.
Tell me about the revenue estimate. I mean, isn't that how the budgets get so far off, is that revenue estimate never gets right? It's always a little ambitious, maybe.
Well, I mean,
what can a governor do in this situation when you're trying to agree on one?
It's a negotiated term.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's some days you want the roses to come up. Some days they need to be trimmed. You know, I mean, it's we tried to be as accurate as we could, and the only person who had to be accurate was the governor.
Yeah,
I mean,
you could say in May the budget's balanced with your revenue estimate, but by November, you know.
I mean, I think a lot of the legislators never really figured out what the core of their power was. They were trying to.
What is the core of their power?
You cannot spend money unless they appropriate it. Instead of thinking, what's this guy cutting, or how do they do this, how do you do that? And how do we spend more money than him in certain areas or whatever? How do I top him with the K-12 formula, or how do I top him here? The other side of that, and I think this whole Amendment 10 thing is a reaction to that. Was dangerous and continues to be dangerous and put at risk the AAA credit rating will in the future if it's not handled correctly. But that's, once again, I there's only one person in the state required to balance the budget, and that's the governor. And I took that responsibility seriously. I appreciated the help of the legislature in getting as close as we could to it. I tried not to play a lot of politics with them. I do think they were incredibly irresponsible on the tax side. Incredibly irresponsible. Where would we be today if my veto of 253 hadn't been sustained? Where would we be today if the Friday favor $756 million that they passed 2 years later, had that veto had not been supported? That would be a combined $1.8 billion out of an $8 billion general revenue budget would not exist. Okay? And we would be, in essence...
But they would say taxes would also be higher.
Why? I said I wouldn't raise them.
Well, when they lowered the taxes... I mean, they did attack, maybe be small to most people, but it existed. Let's talk about the tax later. Let me get to this third point.
Sorry.
Keeping tuition costs low.
Student debt just bothers me in a big way, and it's bad for our economy. You have kids growing up. Great. The thing we tell them in America is you need to get education. If you do, you can make money. You can live an independent life. And then we give them, when they walk and they graduate from college, they get off the podium and they get to the other end and they get a bill and they spend their first 8 or 9 or 10 years paying off what we said you needed to do. And it just bothered me. So I was committed on keeping tuition down as low. I'm glad when I graduated from governor after 2 year terms, we were still number one in the country keeping tuition increases down.
That's a success, right?
That's a huge success. But the other thing about it, that's different than some of the things going on now, we also worked on quality of education. I mean, I brought all the colleges in. We redesigned programs. We made transfer easier. We upped scholarships. We working with folks, we had projects and things out there. We did the bond issue, focused dollars towards STEM. I mean, we wanted college not just to be cheaper, but better.
So about healthcare. You wanted more Missourians to have access to healthcare. Success? Maybe not.
We've got 140,000 kids covered. I mean, I wish we would pass Medicaid expansion. It would have been a lot easier to do some things. Instead, we had to kind of retool and dig in and just use all of the executive branch tools we have, and probably got 140,000 kids covered that weren't covered before. But I just think it was a mistake for the state of Missouri not to accept the federal dollars and move forward on Medicaid expansion.
So I read these five to every Republican I talked to, which is over two dozen, about your time in office. Number one, they might qualify, but they say it was success on jobs. Number two, they give you great credit for how you handled the budget, even the ones when you cut, and they would know they were sending you stuff that they got.
Yeah,
it.
I took it seriously.
In hindsight. Number three, they give you great credit on some of the deals you made in higher education. Number four, maybe not an F, but maybe a C+.
On healthcare?
On expanding healthcare. They didn't want to expand the healthcare, so they thought you expanded it as much as they could try to limit. You made progress with them trying to stop
it.
It's
turned into a political question for them. I mean,
isn't
the president, no. Some stuff you get beyond that. You really do. The money, we got beyond that a lot. We got way beyond politics with a lot of guys on money.
But is it a political
in the rooms? I mean, when you're finishing stuff.
When Massachusetts voters vote for a Republican to replace Ted Kennedy to try to avoid this thing, isn't it political? Try to avoid Obamacare? And that seems political.
My only point was I thought that their arguments were political. Things like repair it before we expand it. Kind of was waiting for all those repair bills to get to my desk and never quite made it. Instead, they expanded the asset limit and added $23 million a year in additional costs because they didn't want to spend down to hurt people, all sorts of stuff. So, I mean, and we laid out five areas, specific areas. I mean, I'm a big guy. I don't think you should. I'm not an entitlement guy. They should work. I mean, I wanted to stretch the edge of the envelope. I was willing to play on all five areas. More work, you know, come off it sooner. Some co-pays, and all that sort of stuff. I wanted to play. I thought we had a great opportunity to actually make some reforms. And so when I say I'm frustrated by it, Scott, I was frustrated that the excuse that they used was let's reform it before we expand it, but they wouldn't come to the table and work with me to reform it because I sent as many possible signals as I could that I was prepared to do just that.
You weren't a pro-Obamacare person in your first term, though. You're from DeSoto. You were living in Cole County. Could you understand why it was hard for state senators to support Obamacare? The political aspect of it. I mean, I have a sense you, more than most people, could at least relate to the fact this is really hard to support.
I thought Obamacare, if you look at it politically, had two serious problems. The timing-wise, if you look at these moments of history, these wrinkles in history become important. Remember, they were trying to get it passed before the summer recess in D.C. That's when the police came to the door of an African-American professor in Boston, and it got jumpy. And the very last question in his press conference in the White House that the president was having to say, let's get health care done, he instead talked about Gates, that guy. And he said, in essence, the cops were wrong. I know this guy. And the momentum went away. I mean, they didn't get it done, and that was the summer when you had all these bad town hall meetings and all sorts of stuff. They were actually trying to get it done, and his being loose, shall we say, off topic there, led to a cavalcade. The second piece is in his first debate with Romney, when Mitt Romney turned to President Obama and said, "Healthcare, Obamacare," and he had, looking back at the tape, and he said, Mr. President, is it okay if I call it Obamacare rather than the Affordable Care Act? And the president paused for a second, and he said, sure. When it became a personal Obamacare as opposed to an issue to help people, when he had to internalize that, I think those two moments, as far as the wrinkles in politics, and we all see these times when things happen which cause momentum to be lost or cause it to be shifted. Once on a stage running for president, he said, no, this is me, as opposed to this is for people that need the health care. I thought that the steam came out.
Number five is one I ask, and very few folks thought you could look back and say a success on ethics reform. I heard you myself in a State of the State address say you'll put it on the ballot if they don't pass it. Let me just start from the top. Do you believe there's an unethical culture in Jefferson City?
I think that money in politics, if it's not controlled, is problematic, both in perception and reality. I think the perception part is as important as reality.
I think it's perception too. I don't think it's reality.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't meet that many. I don't think people run for office to be bad people. I think they run for good reasons. I really do. I have never met anybody who says, I want to run for office because I want some cigars and free steaks. Okay, that's what nobody does. That they don't drive up from Winona or Puxico so they can get a cigar and a steak. They run up there because they're trying to do stuff. So I don't think they come. I don't think it attracts bad people. But I think the public perception, with so much money running around, and when campaign contribution limits, which I support, were gotten rid of, the promise was that it would all be open. That if you were going to get rid of limits, what we needed, the sunshine on this, would cause the problem to be, as long as everybody knew in real time what people were getting as money, then it would help. And unfortunately, people have even backed up on that sort of stuff. But no, I don't think that.
Did you ever have an issue? I mean, to me, I'm a more pragmatist than anything else. I understood it, but you were taking large contributions while saying there shouldn't be.
Right.
Explain that to a person that's not political.
I play by the rules and what the rules are, and you need to help me. If you don't like that, you need to help me change those rules. I support campaign contributions. I laid out numerous times what I would. I think also term limits has ties into it a little bit too, Scott, because I think that once term limits came, one of the one of the things that happens with term limits is things become a little more like parliamentary. The dollars move towards leadership committees a little bit more, and money is moved that way, and it causes things to be a little more partisan.
When you were in the Senate, somebody buy you a steak?
I'm assuming.
Would you have a lobbyist gift report somewhere?
I don't even think we had them. I don't think we were required to file.
But if there would have been, would your name have been on John Britton's report somewhere?
I'm sure it would have. I wasn't a guy that went out to dinner that much. I mean, and all that sort of stuff.
I remember working for Mark Richardson in right before Republicans took over. I don't remember the Post-Dispatch or the Star complaining about ethics when it was a liberal legislature passing what we thought at the time were liberal laws. I now see a conservative legislature passing conservative laws, and now ethics is a huge issue where I don't recall it being quite the issue previously. Is that a fair analysis? You've seen it all.
I think that, to me, getting rid of contributions after the public passed it overwhelming, after I went to the U.S. Supreme Court and upheld that, coming right back and by one vote, getting rid of contribution limits was a break, was a thumbing the nose of the electorate and the people of the state. And regardless of whether you're conservative or liberal, that legitimately upset both the press and Missourians. And I think
so. That was the part that makes that ties the logic together. You think that's the piece that makes it make sense? I could see that.
I see these as kind of times when you come to forks in the road, and you go one way as opposed to the other. I don't see them as this is not a left turn or a right turn. It's factors that begin to shift the field.
Well, let me ask you to grade yourself. So issue one on jobs, a success.
Clearly, I can drop the unemployment rate down to 4.4, kept it on the national average.
Yeah. Balance on the budget, a success?
It was a lot of work, and we got it done. And I think that going 29 times and getting reconfirmed as a AAA, the time I spent in New York being cross-examined by 25-year-olds with suspenders on, that was incredible. Definitely.
More Missourians having health care, a success to the extent you could?
Not as much as I would have liked, but I think that we got more kids covered, which made me feel good. Plus, on the mental health side, we were able to do some really dramatic things, really dramatic. Partnership for Hope, autism mandate, a lot of things. DD waiver, the DD wait list, developmental disability wait list down to zero. It was 7 years to wait for services when I was elected governor. By my last 2 years, we got that down to zero wait for people with developmental disability. Very proud of that.
Ethics reform, grade yourself on it.
Certainly wouldn't be. I don't even think I made gentlemen see. I mean, I talked about it a lot and tried to get things done. At the very end, they passed a couple of things to say, a couple of bills we signed that people wanted to have say they'd solved all the problems, but they didn't.
So you've served in the state senate, you've served in statewide office and governor. Right. What should Missouri's ethics laws be to produce the best government for the citizens?
I believe deeply that. Campaign contribution limits to candidate committees is important. I think the public looks at candidate committees different than they do others. The press looks at them different. You gave that. I wrote the check to Scott Faun or Jay Nixon or whatever. That's a different. And so I think that campaign contribution limits for those particular committees is important. I also think that if money is used for political purposes, the public should have the ability to figure out what it is. And I think we've gone backwards when I say, gave me a C, what stuff that I did, the stuff I did that happened while I was around, since United and other things. But I just think that when the money is hidden, not good things don't happen.
Give me a percent of the money you took that was tied to Missouri. Was it a Missouri company, a union, had Missouri members? Missouri
really fans? High percentage for me. I was 90.
Yeah. We talk about the Joplin tornado. Ron Richards, somebody from across the aisle, but has respect for you. He said you did everything you could do. He went through some of the things you did. State government seems like it worked in Joplin after the tornado.
Well, first of all, people at Joplin are the toughest people on God's green earth. It's easy to work with good people, okay? The thing we were worried about in the front end, Scott, was what happened in Greenwood, Kansas. When that tornado hit that town in Kansas, 3 years later, only 20% of the people were still there. And with Joplin being on the corner of the quad state area down there, and having health care, people moving in and out, it would have been just as easy for people to move to Pittsburgh, Kansas, or move down to South Arkansas, or even Oklahoma. And so from day one, our goal was to try to keep people's confidence in their community that it would be rebuilt and that they would stay there. And if we did that, then it would work. But if you lose the people, then nothing works. Yeah. So we did a whole lot of things to do that. And one of the proudest moments I had was sitting there with C.J. Hoff and his principals on the first day of school and counting as the chits came in from each one of the classes what percentage of the kids showed up for the first day of school on August 17th that year. 98% of the kids came back. Really proud of that. The only low moment was when we had to put trailers up, the FEMA trailers were actually in the Webb City School District. And with their outstanding football program, they were trying to recruit some of the Joplin players to come play for Webb City, which I put a kibosh on. Okay, I said no, we're not doing that. They're Joplin people. Yeah. Okay, you don't get them. The Wistrom guys are trying to get a couple more players. They won another state championship this year too. I think Webb City did.
What so many people kept talking about was you were there. You were there that people could see you. You were there.
I think 10 out of the first 11 days, 75 out of the first 90, so they had 85.
So in the legislature, it was commonplace at that time to criticize you for the use of the state plane. Obviously, you got there on a state plane. You got around the state on a state plane. How important is it for that to use that plane to have a governor that is seen? So when there is something like this, people say he was there.
I mean, John Ashcroft flew a lot. Kip Bob flew a lot. I flew a lot. The only way you can govern a state like this is to be there. And the only way to do that in an efficient way is a small plane. It's just that simple. I mean, if you're going to go to Joplin and you're going to drive, then you got to commit a day to it. Mm-hmm. And as governor, what that means is you'll go far less often. I mean, sure. You just will because your schedule is so busy. And I went to 159 schools when I was governor. 159 times I went to schools. Sat down with students, shot hoops with some of the basketball players, talked to groups and all that sort of stuff. How would I have gotten to Windsor, Missouri? How long a drive is that from Jeff City? Down near Clinton?
Yeah.
2 hours, your whole day. So the bottom line, and plus when you're recruiting somebody to economic development wise, going to Kansas City, going to St. Louis, going to St. Joe, going to Maryville, you got to be really proud of some of those deals. And if you show how much you care. So I never have understood this. Clearly is not something I think the public is that bothered by.
Well, obviously we'll get to the re-election in a second, but it didn't seem to get held against you then. Let's talk about dealing with the president. How do you explain Missouri voting, almost giving their electoral votes to him in 2008, and then an overwhelming defeat in 12?
He had a very intellectual guy and not a gut level politician at all.
Are you a gut level politician?
I can believe I can listen and talk, and hear people. I'm not a gut level partisan politician, but I think I'm a gut level people politician. Understand the difference?
Yeah.
I think he became what a lot of people thought he would become, which is a left-leaning, East Coast-leaning administration, East and West Coast.
Would you say most Missourians think he's a left-wing politician? True or not, that would be the impression they get.
The fact that it's true helps him have that impression.
Yeah. So the stimulus package, though, was something that you had to – I mean, when you have a deficit in the free fall it was in, that's something it was going to pass, you had to be a part of. What was it like dealing with that administration in that time?
First of all, I'm very, very proud of the work that both the president and the vice president did on making sure that those dollars were moved out considering how much money there was, done openly, honestly, and fairly, and not a lot of corruption, that sort of stuff. That was hard to do with the amount of money that's moving. The other thing that people don't understand about the stimulus wasn't really a stimulus. What it was a lot of programs that already existed putting additional money in them.
Sure. The money you were losing to
offset. Yeah, like NIH. Okay, Tom Harkin gets $10 billion put for National Institute of Health. Extra money for grants for research. He's a big supporter of NIH. So as governor, that's interesting. So I had a meeting up at Danforth Plant Science Center with the head of research for Mizzou, SLU, WashU, some other colleges. What can I do to make sure we get more of these grants? What can I do to help make sure that that money comes more to WashU, more to here and there, Mizzou? I learned two things there. First of all, WashU is really ahead of a lot of other people. The other schools were like guppies at a piranha convention, you know. But
the reputation is deserved.
NIH, they're top three every year for the last 30 years. But that's a good example of a program when you say it's a stimulus. Well, it's just putting additional money in a program that already existed.
It might have been cut otherwise.
Yeah, it could have been cut, whatever. But it wasn't like that didn't have the stimulaic effect. You're not going to go hire a bunch of people by giving somebody a grant to look at something in the human genome. So it wasn't a perfect stimulus bill. It did help us backfill on higher ed and K-12 some. And I thought we did a really good job in broadband competing. Some of the stuff that that we're able to do in mobile broadband now is pretty impressive. We'll pay off in a long time.
Let's talk about some of the issues you did and the accomplishments. The Ford plant, huge economic development thing for the state, tough to do. Break down the first time. How does this work for an economic development project? You're in the governor's office. You get a call from somebody that they're interested. How does that work?
Well, first of all, story real quick.
Yeah.
2 years after I was back at Ford, because the auto show, you go up there, you got an auto in your state, and you go, 2 years after we did that, I went up there, and the number three guy at Ford said, "Governor, you got a second?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I got something I want to show you." I said, "Well, come on." He said, "Look at that." And on his desk was a stack of plans, like 2 feet tall. I said, "What's that?" And he said, "I was a senior guy, but not where I am now, before you got elected, and I was tasked out with the plan to draft the closing of Clay Como."
Wow.
And that's the plan. Okay. So if anybody told you it wasn't at risk, I certainly felt like it was myself, because I worked a lot, me and my team worked a long time on that. So we felt that Clay Como was at risk. We knew that the escape was moving to Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that coming. And with gas prices going like this, you wonder where the F-150 is going to be there. You see an aging thing. You see their new vehicle going to Louisville. And we were very concerned. So for a period there, I felt like the governor of Michigan, as much as I was up there, meeting with Mullally, meeting with their whole senior team. What do we need? What can you do? And all this sort of stuff. They were then at the same time designing what new products they were going to come out with. So I was just all over that from the very beginning. A lot of meetings, a lot of straight up work with Ford. Then GM comes along, because GM's gets kind of at the same time. And then we were dealing with the White House and Ratner and all those guys when they were trying to, when they saved the auto industry, but yet they let a whole bunch of the jobs go to Canada. Some of the jobs have, but the bottom line is from the very beginning, Scott.
So what's that incentive package like, the cliff notes on it that you used to get that plant expanded and built up?
It's relatively simple. That is, we let Ford keep a portion of the state withholding tax for employees that were working on new products or in a new factory, basically. So the bottom line is, when the first transit rolled off the line, job one,
mm-hmm.
and I rode in that with Joe Heinrichs, okay, we rode it off the line, the first one, at that moment, the state of Missouri, through that incentive package, had paid zero. Because they had to get the stuff done. Now they get to keep what will end up being about 17 or 18% of what the capital expenditure was. So you end up, by the time it's over, being north of 100 million.
Can you think of a bigger accomplishment that has more direct effect on people's lives?
For the people that were involved there, that has a direct effect on their lives. I do think that the A+, if you're talking about giving 44% increase in folks getting 2-year degrees, that's a pretty big accomplishment.
Give me in the Senate, obviously there was a lot of drama attached to this. How involved were you in that? Did it maybe surprise you that people didn't want to do this?
I had my hands on people, but not in a. I didn't hurt anybody physically, but that needed to get done.
Yeah.
And we come back in a special. It could have been done in a regular session.
Mm-hmm.
That thing really got done, if you really want to know the whole story, about 3 a.m. the night before the last day of the session.
Well,
and
what can you tell us about it?
That Jason Crow, who feels very strongly about pension issues, felt that if we could get a PAYFAR out of pension reform, that maybe he might be able to just vote no.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 3 a.m. And so we ran like crazy the last day of the legislative session that you're trying to get it done that time. And ended up just running out of time. And that's a lot of real estate to cover in the last day.
The incentives matter. They matter here.
Oh, yeah.
They don't come without them. That
in the modern world we're living in, I mean, in the modern world we're living in, if you were to design a system, that would not be the system you design. But people who are involved in deciding, wanting to only do perfect things, should not be involved in government in a significant way. Things are never perfect. So, it would not have happened without that.
Give me
straight up down to Mullally, the CEO. It would not have happened without it.
So we talk.
GM wouldn't have put their $540 million out here. We wouldn't have the Colorado and the Canyon being built in Missouri either, for one of those.
You can either live in reality or not, right?
Yeah, it had to be done, and we did it in a fiscally responsible way.
Let's talk about tax credits. A lot of that, in reality, doesn't get done without tax credits, right?
Yep.
At some point, it seemed like the Post-Dispatch turned on them. And now there's a new thing where they'll just do the federal credits, so they'll be just urban projects.
That's on the housing, yeah.
You've said a lot of stuff about tax
credits.
The
Post never really turned on historics.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
I mean,
you get, know which way wind blows.
You can stand on top of that building and throw a rock and hit 10 of them if you wanted to.
Right.
To me, it's an interesting thing. You suggested changes. You didn't just gut the program in rural Missouri. Why not?
Well, no, I mean, I think it has a useful purpose. My feeling about it was we weren't getting the push out of the relative to the dollars. You know, you can pick a number, whether it's 42 or 55 cents for every dollar that the state gives us, all that goes directly to housing. It's just a lot of people lining up for that. I think they can be made more efficient. But no, stopping housing was not something I wanted to do. Housing programs, they've been good and they've evolved too. We've moved a long way from Pruitt-Igoe. There's single-family houses now.
But now we're heading back that way. You think it's a mistake for the state to head back that way?
Head back to
Pruitt-Igoe.
Well, we'll see where they go. I don't know if they will, but I do think that it's there are good programs there, and if run correctly, can make a difference for families.
You're tied with state parks intimately. You talk about it even when we're not talking about it. Right. Looks like you look for ways to work it in. Where's the love affair with state parks come from?
I think it's a couple of things. First of all, it's what we did. It's what I did. I mean, we go trout fishing in Montauk. We go down to Washington State Park and look at the hike and look around the stuff. I was in Boy Scouts. We went to parks. We hiked, we fished, we hunted. That's what I did. And the parks are free and they're cool. And I like them. And as governor, I think there were 85 when I was first in as governor. And I thought, man, if I want to have 85 parks, what would I have to do? You know, how start from zero on that problem. Go down to Bennett Springs, say, I'd like the whole springs, and I'd like the river for the first 3 miles. How about, we'll take that. Or you can go to Babbler out here or whatever. And so I always felt like parks were something you could give the future. And I just believe from Ken Burns and those guys that parks are, you know, one of America's great inventions. They just are. I mean, Duncan's a great guy. Okay, I don't know if you've met him. He's an interesting guy. I just think they are, and to have them free and available for everybody. Everybody knows a park around their house, and everybody likes
them. I think it's sad how I get the Republicans and legislators' complaints about the last state park purchases, but do you think that's something that if it just sits on the back burner long enough, we'll go in and be a positive for the state?
Same day Donald Trump got 59%. Missourians voted 81% for their taxes for parks.
There you go.
Okay. That Missourians support parks.
Let's talk about
I think anybody that attacks parks politically is making a mistake.
Let's talk about
if they want to attack me for caring about giving future generations more good places to play and hunt and fish, bring it on.
It's all been an issue you talk about in the reelection campaign, like the AAA bond rating. Not easy. Not a lot of states have it. Not a lot of states had it after the recession. Why does that matter to an average Missourian?
First of all, two reasons. It's a reflection of our values. I think Missourians are good with dollars. I think we're tight-fisted people. I think we don't like to waste money. It's a value. It doesn't have anything to do with Democrat or Republican or urban or rural. Missourians are tight with their money. They look for good deals, and they don't try to waste money. So I think it's who we are, and keeping that was important. A lot of people did a lot of good work to get us there to keep it. Number two is it's a signal to folks outside that are investing in your state that we're a good place to invest.
What does Jay Nixon think about Peter Kinder?
First of all, I appreciate his service to the state. He spent a lot of years working, and I think that he was consistent in his positions throughout that. And the other thing that Peter did that he shied away from later in his career that I really appreciate was he used to write a lot. I mean, when he was working on the paper, he would write stuff. And I just really appreciate folks that are in public office and had the guts to write stuff and put it down. And Peter was a writer, and is a good writer. I mean, in my view,
Peter's critics, he's got guts.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he lays it out there and on some of that sort of stuff. So we just never had good mojo. You know, some people you just don't have good mojo with. We just didn't ever communicate well. There's other people like that with me. And then people were pushing us against each other sometimes on stuff. And he felt the need to bark at me a little bit. And, I felt the need not to really give a lot of thought to the lieutenant governor when you're governor. Because I just think that the public thinks it's strange to have, in essence, the president and vice president fight each other or whatever. They don't think about it as much as partisans and all that sort of stuff. So I just didn't want to join in that. I think he felt an obligation as a leading elected from his party to be the government waiting of the critics, and I just didn't want to respond to it. So I kind of got into a mode of just not thinking about it and not talking about it much.
As the season wore on, Peter stepped aside. Did not choose to challenge you. Chose to run for re-election. No major Republican politician stepped to run against you. Are you kind of, when you wake up in the morning, are you reading Comvest or something and looking for the person to announce and they just don't do it? Who did you assume would be your opponent when Peter Kinder stepped aside?
I didn't really land on the self-funder. Who it ended up being was not who I was thinking.
But
so
when
that
you
was
start
a surprise.
Clicking through senior Republicans, aren't you assuming one of them steps forward?
There's not a great record of people who had significantly successful state careers after I ran against them. I'm a nice guy, but I scrap pretty good too. And so I think...
the elected people that were around Republican politics, was there one you were concerned about? Who would you not have wanted?
I felt that when you run for re-election, the race is about you. It's not about the other guy. It just is. That's why re-elections are not very much fun. Because when you're running the first time, you're running about what you want to do. The second time, it's all about you. So re-elections are just not fun. So I was more worried about kind of what we hadn't succeeded at or what we hadn't met our obligation, met our promises on. I was more worried about myself than I was who run against.
So I assume at first it's a little bit concerning to have a person with no record and could self-fund a campaign. That's not the ideal situation to get an opponent on. What did you think of Dave Spence?
I worked my way up in this line of work. Working with Gephardt, got Jefferson County as a congressman, helping young voter stuff, being involved in Democrats, being on the board of a shelter workshop. I did a whole bunch of stuff. Then I ran for state senate. Then I ran for, worked my way up. And these folks just try to come in at the very top, especially in that situation. I don't mean to say this in a pejorative way, but I never. I never really I would have thought that there would have been more solid, creative ideas. If I was coming in from outside and I wanted to do something like that, I would have thought that I'd have bigger ideas. So I never was behind and never felt like we were going to lose.
So let me ask you, it looked to me like the real way you could have lost was Barack Obama. You could tell by 2012 was not popular in the state. 2010 was the greatest
before
year
2012.
Ever. But yeah, I mean, you could tell that your
2010 wasn't all that cool either.
Was your real problem being tied with Barack Obama and it just being a heck of a Republican year?
It was a big Republican year. The wave was pushing that year, but I felt pretty confident that I had gotten around the state, that people knew me, that I'd be okay. I thought the march would be a little closer just because of the environment, and it was a little bit, but still, double digit. So
the Aiken thing helped. Did it demoralize Republicans, maybe?
I'm assuming it did, and it made them seem a little more.
Nobody was proud to vote for Aiken. Even if they did, I don't think they were thrilled about it.
Not many anybody has ever told me they did.
You've got a few liars, I'm sure. You ran, though. I remember this ad, one of the better ads I've seen in Missouri politics. You're in a green shirt with a beautiful Missouri background talking about how you don't do things in Missouri like they do in Washington. Is that not just saying I'm not Barack Obama?
We were sensitive to making sure we had good separation.
So what movie or what'd you do the re-election day?
I went back to my mom's grave down Versailles. Spent some time there. It's a little more difficult when you're governor. It's a little less. It's hard to kind of sneak around. And so I went back down there, and then we went on to St. Louis. The bottom line is, you don't want to be in a car with me. So we just drove around the state, went to a few places.
Governor, thank you so much for taking us through your first term. We'll pick back up our next segment with the start of the second term.
Absolutely.